D-Mace Vingit and Donick 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingin, and David Janes here with you. It is 4 o'clock on a Monday, so we welcome in Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee following the Commodores' 17-10 win against the Missouri Tigers on Saturday. Clark, how are you today?
I'm very well. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well. Congratulations on the win on Saturday afternoon. Your defense stepped up huge in several crucial moments in that game, but C.J. Hurd's fumble recovery at midfield in the fourth quarter really shifted the outlook of the game, in my opinion, and he earned the game ball in part for that play. Can you take us behind that specific play and why it was so effective?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, obviously part of the defense coordinator's job is to design opportunities for playmakers to be cut loose and to make plays, and that's what happened in this case. We had we've done a lot with our 7-up kind of max pressure look this year. That's become kind of a signature from what Steve's brought in that role, and so that was a situation where we were presenting pressure, and typically when we would get out of that look, we would play a four-man rush, some type of zone coverage. In this case, we actually kept the boundary safety engaged in a zone blitz. So we pressured CJ. He was able to get in the backfield. I think it kind of caught the quarterback off guard, and the quarterback was in between handing the ball off and pulling it, and CJ happened to get there just in time to be the beneficiary of the mishandled mesh point. So he ends up taking the handoff, and the rest is history. Good call, good play, and obviously a huge moment for us in our program.
MK Young was part of the New Mexico State contingent that joined your program. He averages, I think, 4 rushing attempts per game thereabouts, but as we saw Saturday, he tends to make the most of them. What impresses you most about him, especially considering he did not play football last season? And for those who don't know, how did Young spend his season away from the game?
Well, he basically he was working kind of almost like in a mission trip role with his church, and was involved in church activities. He had a few things to get done with respect to some academic stuff, and the vision was always that he would be here. It took a year for us to get him. MK is like just such a light. He's a incredible person. He has a positive attitude towards everything he does. So there's no surprise that he was able to make it through a challenging year away from the game, and get here and not kind of skip a beat with respect to the contributions he's made to this program. He's a guy that it feels like he's been here for 10 years. Just that's how well he fits with us. And as a player, he's strong. He's got a low center of gravity. So he's really got, really good contact balance. And he's shown this ability to hit the accelerator this season and to take explosive plays and make them touchdowns. So a lot to like about that. I'd say to you, he's a great player, but he's a better person and such a valued member of our team.
We're talking with Clark Lee, Vanderbilt's head football coach, coming off a 17-10 victory over number 15 Missouri. Now, Coach, you guys, it was a hard-fought battle, and Diego does what he does again and leads your team down to a game-winning touchdown. But even before that, the beginning of the game, what do you contribute to the slow start? Because was it more so what Missouri was doing from a defensive standpoint, or was it some things that you guys were doing to yourselves?
Well, it's a combination. I think you have to give Missouri credit. Now, it's a really good defense. I think particularly they're really talented on the edges and kind of through the middle of that box. And so they made space hard to come by. I thought they played hard and they played physically. And we did too. We just – there were moments where they were in position, made the play they needed to make, and they were able to kind of get us off schedule, force some punts and three and outs early in the game. I think also anytime you're talking about what we believe to be an elite unit in our offense, and the inability to get the ball moving. You know, there are some things in review of the film that, you know, maybe we saw the wrong way, or checks that we made that we shouldn't have made, or, you know, checks that should have been made that weren't made. You know, there's always things that we can learn and grow from. And so, so we'll do that. But, you know, a credit to Missouri. I thought they played a good game. It was tightly contested. I thought in the second half, or excuse me, in the second quarter, we were able to get some movement going and kind of gain some momentum on offense. And then there were some self-imposed negatives there, some penalties, that one of which took us out of a field goal opportunity, and then another that I believe took us out of a touchdown opportunity. So we want to do a better job playing a cleaner game offensively, eliminating some of those penalties that are controllables, making sure we're in the right call and seeing the looks clearly. And from here on out, you know, we're going to play against a bunch of talented defenses. So there are going to be times when it's first and 10, second and 8, you know, third and 6, and we have to punt. We also need to be patient as an offense too, and make sure that we don't deviate or panic in moments where we're not moving the ball.
Do you think that's what you're starting or have learned or continuing to learn about your offense, is that they have the ability, even when they may have some self-inflicted wounds, so to speak, they still manage to stay the course? This team doesn't panic. Is that something that you've been learning and continue to learn about your team? Because like you said, it's only going to get harder as you go.
Well, honestly, it's something that we've been really intentional about growing within our team. So I think these are things that we've spent a lot of time on since January 7th. Just this is the psychology of winning, and it's learning how to not chase emotions in the game, and learning how to have a great vision for what success looks like on Saturday through the week, and let that channel your energy and preparation. But by the time we're heading to the stadium, we've thrown that vision out, and we understand we don't write the script for the game, but we are the actors, and we have to have the right response and the right attitude in the moment. And those are things we spend a ton of time on. And what I know about my team is that this is a resilient group that never feels out of it, and also doesn't feel entitled to a perfect performance. And so we're not going to be offended when it doesn't go our way. We're going to step on the field and try to do the next right thing the right way. That's just a part of our mindset and a part of our DNA, and that's what's helping us be successful, especially in a game that played out like Saturday's game did.
We're talking to Clark Lee, head coach for Vanderbilt, as they're coming off the big win. They've got another huge game against Texas coming up on Saturday. And Clark, I asked you about Diego sliding down at the one last week to seal the game. He was tackled on the one with the score tied at 10. And then I think there was a timeout right in there. But I was wondering your thought process. How close was it? Because I'm sure you guys were probably doing the math in your head to doing the drill where you milk the rest of the clock and then kick the field goal on the last play. I'm guessing that was weighed, but probably not the move that was the right move.
Certainly. So we were playing through all those scenarios, and I think it had Missouri had one timeout left and not two, that would have been viable. Now you still would have returned the ball to them with a little bit of time, but there's a point at which that time becomes negligible in our mind. You know, if it's inside 20 seconds or inside 30 seconds and they don't have timeouts and you have a 3-point lead, I think you like your chances there. So we were kind of talking through all that and just kind of figuring out what was the best tactic in that situation. Obviously, with two timeouts, it wasn't viable if there would be too much time left on the clock. And so, you know, we were going to score 7 points and we were going to defend the field with the defense, and felt good about our chances that way too.
One thing that I notice a lot, I'll use Diego as the example, but when I go and watch the post-game press conferences, there's two or three guys that take questions in addition to Diego, and it's been a lot of different guys, which speaks to the depth of your team and how your team is successful. There's a lot of different contributors, but they all say the same things, and they all, I think, is as much attention as Diego gets, he's very good at deferring
to his teammates, and look, they all kind of look at each other as equals. Like Diego's quote that jumped out to me was, "I'm only up here because I play quarterback." He's like, "Otherwise, I wouldn't have been one of the stars of the game." So that really looks and speaks to, it seems like you have drilled in a lot, and these guys have bought into just playing and truly loving one another and playing for one another.
Well, it's what makes a team special, and certainly, you know, we have good players, but we play a connected style of football, and they, you know, they've sacrificed a lot together. They believe in one another, and they celebrate each other's success. And so, yes, I think that's a kind of a hallmark of our team and our program. You know, this isn't about one person. I think a lot of times narratives try to make it that way, and we fight against that internally here to recognize that everyone playing a role in this program matters. That might be the starting quarterback, that might be the head coach, that might be the defensive coordinator. I'm not going to name every role in the program. You understand what I'm saying? certainly that extends to you know, guys that are on our service teams and scout teams and are helping us get prepared each week. And so there's a real belief that every role matters. There's a real belief that if you bring a championship attitude to the role, that a championship is inevitable. And so that's the challenge. That's the fight. That's kind of what's in front of us right now. And a credit to our team. They believe wholeheartedly in this. And I think that's what, Willie, you're seeing come across in those post-game interviews.
You've worked very hard to compartmentalize all of the attention that's starting to come, because there's a value with it. You want to use that to your advantage. But how cool was it at game day? I had such a great time. I was there at the early portion before you came in there, before I went over to the arena for the Predators. But it was such an amazing setting live. I got a whole new appreciation for that event and how big that is. But how did you try to soak it up but also still stay focused on the task?
Well, first of all, those guys are total pros, and you know, they do a great job of bringing attention and obviously creating a lot of energy, but they don't create a lot of distraction for us. I really appreciated the way they worked with us to make sure that we were able to maintain focus on the game. And what an unbelievable moment for our program, for our university, and for the city of Nashville. I thought, just again, the crowd, the energy, the attention, all of it. I thought Nashville shone through. I thought Vanderbilt University did, and obviously our program did. So really cool. And as far as, you know, soaking it up, I mean, I think you live it out. You know, I was there when I was there, and I was gone when I was gone. But ultimately, nothing is permanent. You know, it all is fleeting, and you know, we're back in our process now, but we can enjoy the energy that surrounds us right now and the attention we're getting, and recognize that it's a product of all the hard work we put into this and the belief we've had before anyone else could really see the good in what we were doing. And so it's a reminder for us to keep our heads down and stay working, but certainly it's neat for all of us to have a program like College Game Day be a part of our Saturday and to get the attention that we're getting right now for all the good work we're doing.
So is today day 293? Have I got the math right on that?
That's right.
293, which you always say, you know, we've been together since January 1st. But I guess the question is, because that is your approach to your team, is every day has the same importance. But with where you guys are, is it more of a challenge? Do you emphasize it more as you guys continue to have success, or do you feel like the guys get it to where you don't have to emphasize that as much?
In terms of the amount of time we put into it?
Well, not the time you put into it, but just you're moving into you know, a higher level of significance. There's more on the line each week, and each week that you have success, you're getting into a, you know, a different level of conversation and spotlight that you didn't have before. But your message is the same.
Yeah. So first of all, the 293 days is from January 7th. So if anyone's out there doing the math, I want to be clear that January 7th was the first meeting that we had. And we're very intentional about, I think if this is interesting, in terms of what does it mean to build a team, a college football team? I think a lot of people see training camp as the beginning. And I think when I first started in this role, I wasn't too different. You know, it just seemed like that was the starting point for your team. And so we would wait to do a lot of our formational conversations around the first day of training camp or report day until I realized that, like, truthfully, and for as much time as we spend together, the formation for the teams begins in January. So you have to look at the cycles of team building different than the academic calendars. We talk about three cycles: formation that runs January through spring practice, preparation that runs summer through training camp, and then execution that is basically your season cycle. And we do that because each one of those kind of presents unique challenges and also unique opportunities for allowing the team to take shape or take form. And when we talk about the number of days that we've been together, it's just a reminder that there are no mistakes here. All of this has been planned for. All of this has been prepared for. We set a course for the vision that we're living out right now on January the 7th. And in that, Willie, it's like it really doesn't get more intense every week, or it doesn't get bigger every week. It just is. And every game's important. Every climb's important. We take them one at a time. And on the back end of that approach, you can unlock some really cool things for yourself after the season ends and into the postseason. But until you're to that point, you know, you have to step into each week like it's the most important one. Like, it's the one that you got to win. You're going to do everything you can to play the best you can, and then you're going to learn from it. You're going to pull the learning forward.
Clark, before we let you go, I nerded out over something I heard on the broadcast, which will not come as a surprise to Willie, Derek, or our listeners, maybe even you. Bob Wischusen on play-by-play at one point during the game shared that you have shown your team clips of the Vegas Golden Knights' forecheck and Nolan Richardson's 40 minutes of hell at Arkansas to demonstrate how creating havoc can lead to success. How did you come up with that idea?
Well, first of all, Clark, I also have to know, I hope I wasn't in any of the clips of getting trapped by Todd Day and Lee Mayberry and those guys for Arkansas, because that there might have been out there. May or may not have been out
there.
That's
right. That's good. This is more of a defensive conversation, Adam. This is like what defensive football should look like, feel like, the suppression of time and space. And I've done this, in fact, at Notre Dame, when I was the coordinator there, we would use these visuals. And like Nolan Richardson talked about 40 minutes of hell, we would say 60 minutes of hell. You know, it's not original, but why, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So, and to me, you know, sometimes the best teachers come outside the game you're playing. And sometimes, honestly, it's like a refresher because you feel like we watch so much football film. The idea that I can put a basketball game on and say, watch this team press, watch them trap the ball, watch the panic that occurs, and watch how they take defense and create offense, right? And the same on a tight forechecking hockey team. There's both a visual element of that where you're pinning a team against the boards and you're again forcing them to panic with the puck, but also there comes a point where their only outlet is just to throw it up off the glass and hope that it doesn't ice. Like, so I think at the end of the day, these are things that are transferable to our game, and sometimes it's fun to see how in sport, you know, even though the ball is different, the field is different, some of the principles actually don't change. And so, yeah, we've used those visuals. I think they're great. And specifically, I use them in coaching defensive football.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee has been our guest on D. Mays, Vangen, and Donick. He joins us every Monday during football season. Clark, thank you so much for your time. As always, good luck this weekend against Texas.
My pleasure, guys. Good to be with you.
Yeah. You as well. The number 9 Commodore. Wow. Say that, Willie. The number 9
Say it, Willie.
Commodores.
Say it.
Come on.
It, Willie.
Hey,
say it.
Fact's a fact.
Say it.
Facts
what is
fact.
It?
They are number 9.
Okay, the number 9 Commodores visit the 20th-ranked Longhorns on Saturday. Kickoff is scheduled for 11 a.m. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will react to what We will react to what Clark had to say. We will also look back at Saturday's win for Vanderbilt against Missouri. Can we start talking CFP now? Coach Willie may have other ideas, but we're going to do it anyway. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
You're going to have game day here on your campus and a big game that everybody's watching. You guys to find ways to win what Clark said was an ugly game. What does that say about who you guys are?
I think we're a bunch of misfits, you know. A lot of guys are repping it on their shirt. You think about our team, Richie Hoskins, a Division III player, lacrosse player who came out and he's on our squad, you know. MK Young, not recruited at all. Myself, not recruited at all. Eli, who's a washed-up quarterback. But that just, like, our whole line, or a lot of our line is, like, FCS, Conference USA guys, guys who were slept on, you know, and I feel like we all got that chip on our shoulder. And then defensively, same thing. You know, Josh Singh, bunch of misfits, you know, who really just don't care about what the people say. We just want to go out there and play.
That was Diego Pavia after Vanderbilt's 17-10 win against Missouri on Saturday. Unfortunately, Willie, Golden Misfits is taken by the Vegas Golden Knights. How about the Black and Golden Misfits? Is that too close?
That's too long.
Remember, the Vegas Golden Knights had to make a deal with Army. They couldn't be the Black Knights.
They had to be the Golden Knights.
They had to work that out. They got the colors. That was a whole thing. So it's nothing new for Vegas, that's for sure.
I said Friday that Vanderbilt entered its matchup versus Missouri as a curiosity to the general population. The buzz was building, but Saturday was an opportunity for the Commodores to really capture Nashville's imagination. College game day looked awesome. Willie is going to share his experience later in the show because he was there Saturday morning. The game was thrilling. Vanderbilt, of course, came out on top. And the college football playoff is a real possibility. Frankly, I am just glad that there is a football team in town that is playing games with actual stakes. So, Willie, it is impossible to ignore the momentum building behind the Commodores right now.
Yeah, and they're a very intriguing group. I think it's hard for me to speak about it because I would be watching Vanderbilt football regardless.
Yes.
I was the one watching the 11 a.m. games that, you know, would never even make a sniff of game day. Like, they wouldn't mention it unless they were playing somebody. So I'm watching anyway. But I think this team showed that they've got an endearing quality. And it's the misfit thing, I think, is something that can resonate with people. They are a bunch of underdogs, right? There are a bunch of guys that were not recruited heavily out of college in a lot of cases, or they were lower recruits. Maybe Vanderbilt was the best offer they had, or maybe they went somewhere else as an underappreciated guy like Pavia. He reeled off four or five of them. They wear these shirts. It says Misfits on it. But how they win, it's really evident. They won that game on Saturday for one reason, and that is because they truly – D-Base, every team wants to play for one another, right? They always say, "Let's we play for each other." You can see it with these guys. They truly love each other. I mean, it's amazing. They gravitate, and there are so many guys that make plays. Had you ever heard of Hurd? You ever heard of Hurd, the guy that stole the ball?
No.
Unless you watch every week,
I've
seen him. He's got the hair coming out the back of his helmet. That's how I know it's him, right? But they have all these guys that are doing a job, and they're not star players, right? They're not guys going, "Oh, this guy's going to be a third-round pick," or "This guy's projected to be a first-round pick." It's a collective. But they willed themselves. That was not their best performance by far. And Missouri is a very good team. That's the best defensive line that Vanderbilt has faced, I think, this year. They gave Vanderbilt a lot of trouble. That's the first team Vanderbilt has not been able to just run it right at and set their stuff up. So it was hard. But they found a way. So it's just a special vibe that they're giving off right now.
Yeah, it is. If you look at this team, what is the adage? If you go for the moon, you may land upon the stars or may end up landing with the stars. Shoot for the moon, man, land with the stars. I think that's what Vandy is. They do have a bunch of stars on their team. They do. You look at Diego Pavia. He's a star. Is he your ideal quarterback? No. But he's a star in his own right. You look at the running backs. You look at the receivers. They have guys that are becoming stars, or they are stars this season. Just look at them all, from Cheryl to all of them. All these guys end up making a play in the game that's significant and that helps them. So I understand what Diego's saying. We're a bunch of misfits, you know, outcasts and all that other stuff. Yeah, you're sort of kind of right in a sense, because you're coming from different universities. But Vandy wanted you. Vandy wanted you. So you're not an outcast. You're not a misfit.
Yeah.
Vandy and the SEC wanted you. Clark Lea had a vision, and he knew that you were the right general for the vision that he had.
But that's the story to go back, excuse me. I almost said gold back, no pun intended.
You could have said that.
I could have. To go back to the Golden Misfits, Clark Lea showing his team footage of the Vegas Golden Knights' forecheck. The reason why the Golden Knights adopted the Golden Misfits label is because all of those players were playing with chips on their shoulders because their teams quit on them, in their own minds,
right,
in the expansion draft. And that was a rallying point for all of them. The Golden Knights made the Stanley Cup final in their first year of existence. So I can see the parallel that Diego Pavia was discussing in that clip. We're not highly recruited. We've transferred a lot. But when you put us all together, it's just the right mix. That's what's been working for this team. It just feels like the right mix.
But Willie, isn't nowadays, and you can answer this too, Adam, but nowadays, everybody's misfits, because everybody, every year.
There's all kinds of transfers.
Exactly,
yes.
All kinds of transfers. So everybody, it's getting to a point where everybody can use what Vandy's saying, but everybody is not Clark Lea and can put it together perfectly with the right leader. Every team could say, you wouldn't play me over here, so I transferred over here. You wouldn't play. Hell, Ole Miss got a quarterback that transferred to Ole Miss. So
Ole Miss has got a version of Diego Pavia
going
right now that is not getting near the attention, but that guy is unbelievable.
Well too. Exactly. Yeah. So I think in today's sport, college particularly, the sort of misfit cast out, that's going to happen. But what doesn't happen, because you don't see what Vandy's doing, you don't see it at other universities. And best believe they're trying when they bring in guys from other universities and put it together. It's not working. Clark Lea has found a way to make this work, and it starts with Diego Pavia. He's the right general, the right leader for this team that he's putting together and the way he's putting this team together. Yeah, they may be guys from different areas or different other colleges they went to before, but he saw enough in them to bring them here, because he knew under this system that if they bought in, which I'm pretty sure once he brought in Diego, if they bought in, then this would be a good team. And they bought in, and this is a good team.
Keith quickly on our text line says, with NIL, Vanderbilt can offer you money to play for them, play in the SEC, and to get a degree from Vanderbilt. They should be winning the national championship every year now. Let's not get ahead of ourselves,
Keith. No.
But the rest of it makes sense. The recipe, yes.
What he's talking about, makes sense.
Yes.
Now that you can pay individuals. Because Vandy was never going to go under the table and pay nobody. They just wasn't. At least I never heard about it.
I wish. I would tell
you. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They wasn't going to do that. But we knew the schools that probably was going to do that and did do that. But now that everybody can be paid, now Vandy, I'm not going to say they've been waiting to use that big pocketbook they got, but Clark Lea, Candace, and everybody, and the people that are tasked to run that program, they've been waiting, and they forced y'all to open up y'all wallets. Because if you don't complain about what's on the field. because you can no longer say, well, we're not going to do it because it's illegal. I know that other team may be doing it, but we just can't do it. Now you can't say that. Now
it's legal.
Exactly. Now you got to step up to the table.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on Vanderbilt's 17-10 win against Missouri on Saturday. The Commodores now the ninth-ranked team in the country, preparing to take on the 20th-ranked Texas Longhorns on Saturday. By the way, according to ESPN Bet, Texas is favored by 1.5 in this matchup. We'll see how that line moves throughout the week. 615-737-1025. And in just a little bit, Willie is going to detail his experience on or at. He was not on College Game Day. Well, maybe you were. Maybe you were caught on camera.
Max Hurst, I did see. I went back and watched it. Max Hurst did make a cameo. He was sitting close enough to the stage.
Well, you were at College Game Day.
I was near Max, but I didn't make it on the screen.
We will talk about your experience in just a little bit. But coming up next, we'll get back into the Titans with ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport. We will break down the Roger McCreary trade with him and ask him who's next to be traded before next Tuesday's trade deadline. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport, who is presented by Bart Durham Injury Law and fueled by Parman Energy. TD, how are we today?
Hey, how's it going? What's up with you guys?
We're doing well. Let's start with the trade that went down earlier today. The Titans traded Roger McCreary to the Rams for a conditional fifth-round pick. They give up a conditional sixth-round pick as well. Did the Titans get enough in this trade for Roger McCreary?
I don't know about getting enough in the trade. I know that he was being shot for a bit, so that must have been all they could get. I would have thought maybe, you know, just a straight-up fifth for him in exchange, but I mean, you never know how different teams value these different players.
Two questions for you. One, who's next, you think, before next week's trade deadline? And the second question is, Adam Schefter had a report over the weekend. It was yet another report detailing how the Titans are not going to trade Jeffrey Simmons. I believe Schefter used the term off limits to describe Jeffrey Simmons in trade discussions. Do you think that's the right move, considering how many premium draft picks this team needs to get back to contention?
Yeah, well, I mean, to say that and call it a report, you better use quotation marks for that, because, you know, that's like me saying, hey, I'm not getting ready to get in my car and drive home. Of course they're not trading Jeffrey Simmons. It's not any, like, kind of news. But, I mean, I think it's the right approach because, you know, if you draft a player, you draft them to be exactly that. So, Jeffrey Simmons, you know, so I don't think that it would be wise to trade him, you know, unless a team just blows him out of the water with some type of offer.
Teron, I want to ask one quick follow-up on McCreary. To your knowledge, did they consider signing him to a next contract? Like,
No.
I think the question we're asking is, if that's all you're going to get for him, isn't it more valuable to keep him and sign him to a next deal?
Well, I mean, it's not more valuable if that's not what you plan to do. Like, he wasn't in the future plan, so it's a move that they felt that, you know, they needed to make in order to take advantage of an expiring contract that they could get rid of.
So, Teron, who should we be watching over the next week as trade candidates to be moved out of Tennessee?
Yeah, I think Arden Key is a big candidate. You look at him, a situational pass rusher, a guy on another expiring contract. You know, pass rushers have value. I mean, he's obviously not Micah Parsons, but he still can give you some type of situational input, and he's the guy that's going to give your locker room, you know, a jolt of energy.
TD, what has been the sort of the temperature of, you know, the organization with Snead? Because obviously, I know there will be some trades made that already have been, but Snead is a guy that is on IR right now, so he'll miss, what, 4 or 5 games here. Is he a guy that you think, looking at what they're doing, where they're headed, do you think this is a guy that's going to be on their roster next year?
Oh, no. I'll be very surprised if he's on their roster next year. I think you look at it, This was a move that was done by the previous regime, and it seems like you know, this group that's in place now, they are doing everything they can to wash themselves of pretty much anything that came from the previous regime. So, you know, I would be surprised if he's around. I don't think he fits anything that they're trying to do as far as the youth movement, as far as a restart, and as far as, like, young, inexpensive talent. And, I mean, frankly, I don't think that Legarius Sneed is the player that he was before that quad injury. And it just – he's different now.
Now, you were there in person, obviously, because this team is, you know, looking at it from afar, rather from television, things don't look right. And I always like to go back and watch it so I can see an aerial view of some things. And it looked bad. But how did it look to you yesterday? Because it could look one way to me while I'm watching it, because I don't see the whole field. But how does it look to you and those that you talk to?
Yeah, I mean, it looked bad, especially, you know, defensively. You see guys just like, oh, he's about to run that route because he's the other guy's doing this. And, oh, man, was he wide open? You know, those types of things. Then you see, you know, sometimes missed shots, like the Iron Manor throw early in the game. You know, that was one that I know Cam Ward would want to have back. That's those types of things. Like seeing that and how seeing it develop and everything. Yeah, it was bad. I mean, this Colts team, they constantly had guys run open in the secondary. It was unbelievable.
Now, I mentioned Big Sweat, and I know he just came back from injury. I get that part of it. I know he's been out for some weeks, and he's still working his way back into it. But I basically just challenge him. Like, he has to play every play as if it's his last play. Because there were several times where I'm watching the film, and then on the replay, it's like he's just walking. And I know if they see that on film, it's going to be addressed. But he needs to start, knowing that Jeffrey is out, he needs to be the one that picks up his play. And frankly, this last game, he didn't do it.
Yeah, there were some times where he got pushed around a little bit. Then there are other times where, you know, he tried to run it down and it didn't happen. He does have to step up, you know, without Jeffrey Simmons in there. I don't know.
Do you think that's more of a Denard Wilson thing, like putting him in the right position or playing him a little bit different or playing him next to someone else? Maybe they don't have no one else to play next to him because Jeffrey's injured, and I get he's at his best when Jeffrey's next to him. But they just got to get more out of the young fella, especially while Jeffrey's not there, because if they don't, it's going to look even worse as they move forward. And the Chargers want to run the football.
Yeah. Yeah, John, Jim Harbaugh, he's a running football coach. That's what he wants to do. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, they got to figure out a way to get more out of Sweat. I just don't know what more they could get out of him right now, because it just seems like I'm just from it's not there. That's kind of like the best way I could put it.
Okay.
It's just not there with them. And maybe a change of scenery will help him. Maybe they got to get someone else to pour into them. I don't know, but what they're getting now is not it. And yeah,
that's pretty disappointing to hear that you a change of scenery for that young of a player who showed so much last year. And TD, I had the same thought as D-Mace when we walked in here. We had not talked about that but he just doesn't seem like the same guy as last year.
He doesn't. He doesn't, at least on the football field, the energy on the field. But, I mean, again, like he had been out for four games. This game is actually one where you really got to watch it closely. And if he doesn't show you something this one, that's probably going to tell you where he is for the most part right now.
Oh, go ahead.
Let's ask about another guy that is an important young player that they, in a perfect world, as they try to build a roster, they need building blocks. How do you see Latham and his progress since he's come back from the injury?
That's another one where it's just like, okay, what more can you give? You know, he had the holding call. He got beat a couple of times. I thought he would be a much better player at right tackle than he's been, you know. But again, you got the injury. He was out a bit. You know, he's three games removed from the injury now, so you should see what he, you know, was supposed to be. But, you know, he's another – they pretty much everybody on the roster, you name the person, they need more out of, and they're not getting enough out of that. That's – I mean, you could throw anybody at me, and I'll tell you the same thing, with the exception of maybe Tim DK.
And that's what I was about to say. Like, yeah, Tim, DK, I like DK. Yeah, I like him.
He's making some jumps here. Mm-hmm. So let's I was going to ask you about Iowa Manor, because we see Helm making some plays. He's made some really nice plays. DK is obvious. He's a good bright spot. Iowa Manor, there's a couple of times per game, it seems like, where there are catchable. We've talked a lot about how Cam delivers it. But for Iowa Manor to max his potential, right, he's got to make those catches when he's got the tough catches. So what are they doing to, like, what does he talk about to try to improve just his hands in general?
Yeah, the jugs machine, that's what they're working on. You know, he does a lot of work on that. I mean, look, he had that catch across the middle. It was a little high, but you got to hold on to that, you know, and those are the things. You got to take the advantage of every opportunity you get, especially like in this case where you don't get – he's not out there getting 10 targets. You know, you get four or five targets, you can't afford to drop two of them because, you know, that limits your production. So it just continues to be something that they're working on. With the jugs machine, they had the lobster machine, which is like it shoots tennis balls and they catch that. But I haven't seen the guys working with that as much. So I don't know, man. They need more out of everybody. I'll say this, though. Tim DK, I like what he said today just about, you know, the mindset, having a positive mindset and feeling like, hey, you know, I'm blessed to be able to do this and I'm going to take advantage of the opportunities. And it's that's the approach that the guys need to have.
Do you think that they can get more out of Spears? Because I'm looking at Spears, and it's like, man, if he was on a good team, I could see the things that he does well, they would work, and we would see this guy pop a lot more, but we don't see it as much here. Is he a guy that, you know, maybe with a change, they're going to have a change of quarterback. I mean, head coach, we know that. But with the new regime, that they can look at him as a piece that they can, you know, put together along with other guys on offense for the next regime moving forward.
They could look at him as a piece, but he has to stay healthy. I think that's the biggest thing. Because even, you know, Brian Callahan expressed the desire to have he and Pollard have the carries and touches distributed more. So, I think every coach that he's played for, you know, even under Vrabel before, you know, Vrabel connected with him. So, you know, it's more of just him staying healthy. Coaches, they understand that he could be the building block, but he could be someone that they could really feature.
Teron Davenport has been our guest on D-Mace Vingan and Donick from ESPN.com. He is presented each week by Bart Durham Injury Law and fueled by Parman Energy. TD, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
All right, for sure. Appreciate you guys.
Yep.
615-737-1025. We will get back into the Titans, who traded Roger McCreary today, and continue to be ass. We will get back into the Tennessee Titans. But before we do that, let's go back to Saturday, Vanderbilt's win against Missouri. On television, the scene at College Game Day looked fabulous. Our very own Willie Donick was at College Game Day. He might have even broken a rule or two, I heard earlier.
I did. Unbeknownst. I was not intentional. Was not intentional.
Oh, you didn't know you were breaking a rule?
Nope.
Okay.
Ignorance is not an excuse, Willie Donick. But we will detail Willie's experience at College Game Day and get back in the Vanderbilt. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.